Hello everyone, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy and I'm net control for this July 25th edition of the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. It's been going on since 1982, mostly under the direction of Dick, K2RIW, who became a silent key about a year or more ago. And now here we are, another Sunday night at 8 p.m. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you the usual link to write down. Okay. As always, if you can't get into the repeater and you would like to ask a question, we usually call those mailbag questions. If you would like to suggest a topic for discussion, if you would like to give me a puzzle, I love take puzzles and play around with them on the technical net, try and squeeze out as much information as humanly possible. So if you have an interesting physics or science-oriented puzzle, that's a good thing. Also, if you would like me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space-related or NASA-related information on the web and discuss it, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have a whole series of interesting links for you to take a look at. The first few don't lend themselves too much to the radio. They're either visual or they're space-related. Paul will get to them. But they're interesting nevertheless, so please take a look at them. And below that, I have a bunch of articles that, if time allows, we will discuss in the Science Talk segment. So if you want to get to my link page, you just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. You can either go to Limark's own website and find the link, or you can directly type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the chat room. I try to stream the audio of this repeater 24/7, so during the TechNet and even after the TechNet. If you don't have a radio available or an antenna available, you can dial into your browser. You can dial into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you access to the audio stream. And as always, want to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a wonderful archive of TechNets going as far back as September 2006. That's available at his website, amateurradio.tv. He recently broke 1 million visitors to his website, so please avail yourself of that as well. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, I will ask people if they have any questions of a technical nature, or would like to discuss the results of something that they discussed at an earlier TechNet, or any particular topic of interest. We will take down their first name and their call sign, and we will try to approach each person on the list in order of their check-in. From then, we'll open it up to general discussions of anything science-related, if you're interested. If we have any further free time, we can do some Science Talk articles, and that should take us approximately to 10:15 when Paul, WS2N, will bring us the SpaceNet report. That should go on for until about 11 o'clock at night, and I will return. I will tie a bow on it and wish you well and call it a night. So if the repeater and my linear amplifier and my radio allow me, that's the plan for tonight. Let me drop for a second. If anyone would like to check in for the purposes of either a question or a comment, please give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. If you have any questions of a technical nature, or any topics you would like to discuss, or if you're returning from a previous question where you tried something new and would like to share it with the rest of us, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Yes, this is Raymond at KD2VYY.
Here is Joel, J-O-E-L, Juliet Oscar Echo Lima, signing and check-in only.
KC2DAW, signing in, supporting the net. WB2KWC, Ken.
Okay, anyone else who has any questions or topics tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Oh, sorry, this is Curtis, KC2DAW.
Yes, Curtis recognized you wanted to just check in, so, okay, I have you written down. Okay, well, we'll start with the list here, and we'll ask a little bit later if some new people have some further questions. Raymond, KD2VYY, you have a question or a topic for tonight?
Yes, I do. This is Raymond. I have a ICOM 7900 series radio, and I've noticed when I set the power up past 80%, you know, almost to 100 watts, the unit, when I PTC, kicks off. It goes into reset mode. Can I get any kind of ideas of troubleshooting this?
Sure, Raymond. We'll ask around, but my initial suggestion is could it be something about the power supply? When you're running it up past a certain amount of power, something seems to not like something. What might be going on? Is there some degree of current limiting or problem with your power supply? Your voltage might be dropping, and that might be causing the problem. So have you checked out the power supply? Have you looked at the voltage and the current readings? Have you tried an alternative power supply for the radio?
No, the power supply I have should be able to handle it. It's a heavy-duty unit. It's a 30-amp unit. And so, therefore, I don't think the power is the real problem from the power supply. I've also tried to set other frequencies, and it seems to be once I get past a certain power level, I get a reset.
Okay, but still getting back to the power supply. I realize that it was sufficient, but things can change. Does your power supply have a voltage and current indicator, and have you been watching it during these incidents?
To tell you the truth, no, I have not. It does have a indicator, and I'm planning on troubleshooting this tomorrow. So I'm just writing down ideas and going to check them off as I go through them tomorrow.
Okay, very good. So at the top of it, I would probably, it's always nice to have, I have these inline power pole-based voltage and current meters so that you can put it in the power line, you know, in series with the device and get a good indication of whether the voltage is dropping down. If there's something that's gone wrong with the voltage regulation of your amplifier, the power supply rather, it's very easy for the voltage to drop and cause all kinds of malfunctions with the microprocessor. But I'll open it to the rest of you guys out there and gals. Anyone else with any ideas why at 80% power the gentleman's radio resets itself?
WB2KWC?
Yes, Cass.
Okay, going along the theme of power, sometimes the issue is basically dirty contacts. Also make sure that if there's any kind of plug involved, it's firmly seated. But the dirty contacts could be if you've got a fuse, that might be, you know, have dirt on it or anything else in the line. Anytime there's a contact, there's the possibility of oxidation and dirt.
Okay, well, it's always good to check your contacts. It sort of depends upon the connectors that you have. I have in the past suggested that power poles, although they're ubiquitous, they're somewhat problematic. It's always a good practice, at least with power poles, at least once or twice a year, to disconnect the power pole and reconnect them. The scraping of the contacts back and forth will remove most of the written grime and oxidation from the contacts. I've had one or two problems with a lot of current going through the contacts that were a little grimy, and it heated up the plastic housing, melted it, and I lost the power pole and had to replace it. So it's possible that there's some resistance in line that's limiting the current. Again, I would pretty much bet that it's going to end up being the power supply. But anyone else with any good ideas, please hit that push to talk button.
KB2ADP, downward inquiry.
Yes, what is your inquiry?
Okay, sorry about that, I couldn't get a key. Maybe the seller could try a different power supply. That one might look at it. Could be something in the power supply itself kind of overloading or breaking down. And maybe try a different power supply. Make sure he's got 13.8 volts coming out of the power supply. And on the low, maybe something in the power supply is breaking down. But let's try another power supply and see what happens back to net control.
Okay, thank you, John. I pretty much suggested the same thing, that what might be happening is a problem with the power regulation beyond a certain amount of current, that it might have been able to carry the proper current previously, but something might have shorted or opened, and now instead of a complete 30 amps of current, it might be limited in some other way, and so the voltage regulator is firing and dropping a voltage. So I agree with you, John. I still think that that's the primary probability. It's the easiest one to fix in many ways as well.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm wondering what he means by reset. You could have a radio, get a little darker. Your display could go wacky like that used to happen on my Kenwood 440. And when you go higher in power, something, you could be getting RF maybe into the shack, causing something to act up that way. I'm just trying to get away from the power supply idea for now. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, well, we'll ask Raymond. I would think that if it was RF, it would probably be somewhat frequency dependent. As you change bands, it might go away entirely, or the amount of power output would have to be changed before you got the same amount of RF caused the same amount of havoc. But Raymond, just for elucidation, when you say reset, could you describe exactly what that entails in your radio?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. It's like I turned the radio off and then turned it right on right away. It goes completely dead, all lights go off, and about 3 to 5 seconds later, it starts booting back up and showing me my startup screens. That normally happens.
Okay, very good. Let me ask you another question. Do you have a dummy load? And if you do, have you or can you use it to see if you throw the RF into the dummy load? That would kind of remove the RF getting into your radio as a possible cause. So any thoughts on using a dummy load?
Yes, I do have a dummy load, and that's going to be one of the items I was going to be working with. I was just looking for other ideas so that if it does not seem to work with that, so I know where to track into. Again, I did try changing the bands to see if I went to a different band, it would change. That would sort of eliminate some of the RF kind of concerns.
Yeah, I would agree as well, but ultimately if you have a good, reasonably shielded, dummy loads are not 100% shielded either, unfortunately. I've had times where I've had conversations with people a mile or so away from me, and we were both operating through our slightly leaky but reasonable quality dummy loads. But certainly another thought when you get down to testing your machine is to try it on a dummy load. Again, since I'm tempted to think that it's not the RF, but it is the power supply, my guess will be when you try the dummy load, nothing much will change. But it'll be useful information. Anyone else with any thoughts or ideas on this subject?
K2JHR.
Yes.
Question I have for him, is there any possibility that there might be a problem with either a processor or a microprocessor in the rig itself, as opposed to just the regulation of the power supply? They had a chance to actually check the rig and make sure that there's no problems with any microprocessors, CPROMs, or chips?
Okay, that's reasonable. It's kind of problematic. It's not like this is a PC where you can swap memory and such. They're soldered down. And then the question is, it seems to be rather unusual that these semiconductors would malfunction at a given power output. It kind of lends itself to something about the power output getting into the CPU or something, right?
That's affirmative. And as you stated earlier, it does sound like it's a regulation problem. Sounds like the power supply itself may not have enough regulation, and it gets to a certain limit. Once it gets to the 80%, apparently it does freaky things. So it does sound very much like something to do with the power supply and regulation, as stated earlier, and I do agree. It might be a very good idea to just throw it onto another power supply that is well regulated and see exactly what occurs at that time. KTJHR.
Okay, very good. So we agree with each other. I mean, if I was a betting man, and I'm not a betting man, I would kind of bet that if you threw a voltmeter on the power supply, when you got to that 80% part and it started to reboot, you would see the voltage dip down way below 13.8 volts. But time will tell. It's always good to have dummy loads in the shack. It's always good to have an extra power supply just in case. You never know when one will go. You know, some people love linear power supplies. Other people like switching power supplies. I'm a big fan of a well-designed switching power supply. They do, for me, the same job that a linear does and cost less and are lighter, are less expensive. And I don't see the noise that some people complain about sometimes. But, you know, if you don't like switching power supplies, then go with a linear power supply. But it's always good to have one extra one in the shack just in case. Any other thoughts on this subject? Please hit that push to talk button. Okay, Raymond, I guess that's it for tonight as far as suggestions. I hope what we said helps. I hope you find the problem and are able to correct it without it costing you too much. And please, Raymond, because we always like to learn from these experiences, come back when you have a chance and tell us how it all worked out.
All right, this is Raymond. Thank you very much for the information. I will report back my findings hopefully next week.
Okay, very good. This is AC2GS, and next on my list is Ken, WB2KWC. What's your question or topic for tonight, Ken?
Okay, thank you, Roy. This is just a follow-up on my saga of a television that keeps on turning itself on. It started, a month or so ago. And it would just mysteriously be on at various times. This net suggested kind of hiding the remote controls and, you know, looking at different settings. The thing that seemed to have worked for a while was disconnecting the TiVo, or disconnecting power from my TiVo, and leaving it off for a few hours. and that kind of stopped working. My latest, you know, started turning itself on again. So my latest thing is I went through all the settings of the television and finally did a complete factory reset. And so far, that seems to have worked at least for a few days. So I guess stay tuned for the continuing saga of my television.
Okay, very good. When in doubt, reset. I think that's very important. Back, you know, in the earlier days of amateur radio, there was nothing to reset because there was, you know, it was just radio components. But nowadays, televisions and radios and all kinds of things are basically just computers. So everything has a reset button. So when you have a problem, one of your first things you should think about is resetting them. I hope, Ken, this is the magic bullet. The problem I have had and that you have had with intermittent problems is that they're intermittent and sometimes they don't give you any clues of what's causing them. They just randomly happen at some point or other. So we all kind of fool ourselves into doing any kind of problem. It's just from doing that they do something magic. They do an a convocation, and it disappears for a few days, and when it happens again, my guess is they don't jump back and say I was wrong. So I wish you luck on this one, Ken. Please tell us the end of the story if you are a ghost TV turning on free, for future.
K2YO.
Yes, Bernie.
Ken, the TV, is there any chance that there is AC power interruptions going to it? We dealt with something like this with big wall-mounted TVs at work that we use for information displays. And some of them had a factory option that when the power went off, they automatically turned themselves on. So if we turn them off at night, and then the next day we would come in, and it's because we had a power interruption in the overnight, and the TV thought it was doing us a favor by turning itself back on after the power cycled off and back on again.
Good evening, Bernie. I haven't heard you on in a while. It's good to hear from you. I don't think that would be the case, because that TV is on the same circuit as the rest of my bedroom, and the clocks in the bedroom would give me an indication if there was a power interruption on that circuit.
Okay, just a thought. We had scratched our head for a while at work on this one, and finally figured this out almost by accident, stumbling over it, looking through the manuals for the TV. K2YO.
Well, that's an interesting feature. That might be more of a commercial business feature. The TVs that I've had in my house, if I unplug them and plug them back in, I don't think they auto-start. So it might be another case of some electrical engineer thinking to make his machine smarter than they should be. Theoretically it's possible that there's some kind of a power fault within the television that's making it think that the power got temporarily, killed for a couple of milliseconds. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I hope the complete reset solves your problem, Ken.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
That happens to one of my digital TV boxes that are hooked up to the antenna. If I get a power failure, that box will, the station will come on. I have the TV off the TV, you won't see anything. But if it was on, that's what you would see. So, the box is all lit up now with, whatever station it's on, and then you have to shut it off.
There's no option in the set-top box software to disable that? That's just hardwired into it that way?
Okay.
Yes. What can I do you for?
I can't remember the gentleman's name, but we're having a problem with the TiVo. But I had a problem like that, and I called the company tech section, and they cleared it up because somebody else had that same problem. So my suggestion, maybe he did, is to call them, ask for a technical section, and tell them the problem.
Okay, thank you very much, Sam. Ken, among the other things that you tried, did you contact TiVo and ask them if they had any good ideas?
No, I did not. And I'm wondering if I should contact TiVo or Vizio, who is the manufacturer of the television. And I could probably simulate the power interruption simply by unplugging it and plugging it back in again and seeing what happens when I interrupt the AC supply.
Yeah, you probably can do that. Also, among the other things I would suggest is if it, of course, comes back. Because obviously, if it goes away once you reset it, you know, just congratulate yourself. But if it continues to be bothersome, is there any way to bypass the TiVo temporarily at least, so that you could at least kind of figure out which device is primarily causing the problem?
I could bypass the TiVo. The problem is I don't have a set-top box for the television. So basically, there would be no program input to use the television with. I guess what I could do is, you know, bypass the TiVo and leave it off for when we're not using it and see if it mysteriously comes on.
Yeah, I mean, try the other options and see if the reset works, but if not, again, you might want to try that. If you have any other streaming dongles, you might want to use them. I don't know. A lot of people, you know, the cost of something like a Fire HD from Amazon, I think it's $20. So people tend to have those dongles all over the damn place. So if you have some other form of streaming hardware, you might want to swap it out, at least experimentally, for a few days. But you only really need to do that if the TV is on turning on or off again.
Okay, that is an idea. The only other streaming device I have, well, not really a streaming device. I have a Chromecast, which will take data sent to it from a computer, from my laptop or something. So I guess we could try that, but there's no source of live TV. I'll have to play around. That is an idea of basically watching something, I guess, streamed to the computer for a while. Okay, all good ideas. I'll have to play some more.
AC2GS. Well, I wish you luck, Ken, and as always, come back, tell us the final solution to this mysterious problem, and we'll all learn a lesson about it. Thanks a lot, Ken, for participating. Ken is AC2GS, and this is the Loimar Technical Net. We're here to hopefully help you with your technical questions or try and explain things or just discuss different topics. So if you have any kind of amateur radio-related questions or topics, please. The night is young. Push the talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
WD2CQT, Larry.
Yes, Larry recognized. What's your question or topic for tonight?
Well, the guy with the radio that was shut off when he reached a certain amount of power, he said he had a dummy load. It's a dummy load that's not just a resistor in a box where the RF could leak out. I'm thinking that RF is getting back into the radio because I've had that happen. Besides that, I have a little question. Should I give it now?
Sure, Larry. I just want to point out that for the most part, dummy loads are just 50-ohm resistors in a metal box that hopefully is reasonably RF shielded. So that's primarily the design. I mean, some are air-based, some are air-cooled with fans, some are submerged in mineral oil, non-conducting mineral oil, but at the core of them is a non-inductive resistance of 50 ohms. And as we talked before, it could be RF. The thing that kind of makes it a little bit less likely in my mind is the fact that you got to rev it up to 80% power on every frequency that that radio works with to cause the problem. So usually RF kind of leaks through with different qualities for different frequencies. So the fact that the frequency is not really having any effect makes me think that it's more the power draw of the transmitter final than RF getting into the circuit. But it's still possible. But Larry, yes, you can certainly ask your question now. Larry, I don't know what happened. When you first came on, your audio was a little low, but I could understand everything you were saying. This last transmission was 100% noise. So whatever you did between the first transmission and this transmission, I would suggest undoing it. No, I can hear you about, you're about 5% voice and 95% noise. I don't know if the battery on your radio is failing or you changed the position of your antenna, but something significantly changed from your original transmission. We're waiting a little bit for Larry to readjust his radio. Larry, are you still out there with us?
W2BZ?
Yes, Rich. Yes, Rich, do you hear me?
Yeah, I'm coming through on Echolink, Roy. While we're waiting for Larry to see if he can get back in, I'd like to ask a question when it's the appropriate time on this new round of COVID. Back to you.
Okay. Well, we'll give Larry another little chance. Try your transmitter. If you can't get in through your transmitter, if you are Echolink enabled, it could be a very useful piece of equipment, so you could try and get through to us through Echolink. If I don't hear you for this next go-around, I'll call you a couple of times later on during this TechNet. But if you think your radio is ready to try another transmission, please transmit.
WB2CQT, I pulled the radio out very quickly and didn't connect things very well. Is it okay now?
Yes, it is much better, Larry.
Okay, my question is this, and I should have been able to figure this out easily enough, but my brain is dead. I have a dummy load wattmeter that's self-contained. In other words, the resistor is in a sealed container with oil, a 1,000-watt job, and I wasn't the original owner, and after measuring a few things and getting an erroneous reading, I realized it couldn't be a correct reading. So I put an ohmmeter on the thing, and it's not 50 ohms. It's 60 or 61. So I'm looking for a simple formula so that if the thing reads 10 watts into 60 ohms, how much would that be into 50 ohms?
Say again, well, what equation are you looking for? Because at first I thought you were going to ask what is the amount of additional parallel resistance you need to get it down to 50 ohms. But it didn't sound like that towards the end of the question. So if you could just repeat it for me, please.
Yeah, the easiest thing would be to add a resistance to it to make the radio see 50 ohms. but the thing is 60 ohms. So I'm looking for a formula that if the meter reads, let's say, 10 watts going into 60 ohms, how much would that be if it were going into 50 ohms? Is that clear enough?
Okay. I don't think that's your most important problem. You, theoretically, you really would like to have a one-to-one standing wave ratio for your dummy load in order to get the idea of what the maximum power output of your transmitter stage is. It's not particularly that transmitters have an internal impedance of 50 ohms. It's that they're designed to feed out the most power with an output to go into 50 ohms. So, I'm not quite sure whether you really just want to adjust the watt meter to calculate based on a more legitimate resistance. It probably reads it on current anyway. I think you probably would want to focus more with either a replacement resistor for your dummy load, and get one that's a non-inductive proper 50 ohms, or a secondary option is to calculate a parallel resistance, you know, 1 over R plus 1 over R equals 1 over the final resistance. So I don't think, I mean, I'd love to hear other people's opinion, but I think changing the watt meter to the different resistance probably is not the most effective means of dealing with this problem.
Yes, adding a parallel resistor would be the best way to do it, but I was thinking of not doing that. Opening the unit up, it's a sealed container, and I don't know what kind of oil is in there. It's an older unit. It could be pyrenol in there. I don't know. But the instructions for calibrating it is to plug the thing into the AC wall power and calibrating it that way, which I'm certainly not going to do.
Yeah, that certainly is an interesting means to do that. I haven't owned anything that quite does that. I don't know what to tell you. Like I said before, I mean, you might kind of correct for the power outage, but it would be reading a erroneous result. It would be reading a power output with a visoir of what? Something like 1.2? I don't know if that's really that useful. You sort of would really like to have a unity standing wave ratio in order to measure the maximum power output of your system. Otherwise, it's not terribly useful.
Okay, we won't hold the topic any longer, but the radio, 100-watt radio, will put out its full power into it without the internal radio SWR circuit cutting it back. So the SWR isn't that terrible. The radio will put out over 100 watts, but I can't measure it exactly. And it's a BMW dummy load watt meter from a long time ago, and it's good for 1,000 watts. But we'll let the topic go for now, and on to the next person. Thank you.
Okay, Larry, I appreciate your participation. I wouldn't think the foldover safety circuits would be triggered at that small a mismatch. Most transceivers don't go into foldover mode until they get completely past, say, 1.5 to 1, sometimes 2 to 1, so it's not surprising at all. But I wish you luck. If you figure something out with that, or if you decide to adjust the innards of the watt meter to reflect the different resistance, let me come back and tell us how it works.
Okay, Roy, thank you very much.
welcome, Larry. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Net. So if you have any technical questions, I totally forgot. How could I forget you, Rich? Let's take your question first, and then we'll open and ask again if anyone else has any questions out there. So, Rich, what's your question?
T2BZ, is this okay to ask a science question? Technical questions, Roy? Go ahead.
Yes, Rich. We'll mix and match. After we're done with your question, I'll see if anyone has any amateur-related questions, and then we'll slide over to science. But you're next.
Okay, my question is, with this second round of COVID that's now again on the news every night, what's your reading on it? Is it...
Okay, Rich. While I was looking at Echolink to see you there, I also saw Jeff AB6MB. He's net control for the Papa System West Coast Antenna Tech Net, a very interesting antenna tech net that's on 10 o'clock our time Friday night. If you can figure out how to get through to the Papa network, try it out. It's very interesting. For 1 second, Rich, I'll put that subject on hold. I just want to find out from Jeff for what he wanted to comment about.
Okay, hi, Roy. It's kind of having to do with the rebooting devices and how many times it can actually fix them. I just recently worked for Cisco for 9 years, and as a network engineer, and one of the tier ones came up to me and says, me and this other networking engineer have been working on this router and we just cannot get it to do this one thing. And I said, well, what happened? So we had a power hit down there in the data center and this thing kind of went nuts in that. And I said, okay. So we've been working on it for a couple hours. Thought I'd give you a try. And I looked at it and yeah, it was acting real funny. And I said, well, let's try to reboot it. Have you tried that? He went, no. Well, let's reboot it. We rebooted it, problem went away. So what happens is when the power hits, a lot of time it goes up and down, and causes the switches and routers to kind of scramble their brains a bit. But that was a case of where a reboot definitely would have saved him a whole bunch of time. So that's all I had. And thank you very much. Back to that, AD6MB.
Okay, very good, Jeff. Yeah, I'm a big fan of resetting things. When my ICOM 7100 was acting rather strange a couple of months ago, the first thing I tried was rebooting it. Unfortunately, sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, it's the easiest way. Also, for all you people out there, please, if your equipment is capable of externally saving your configuration, please make a copy on a thumb drive and put it on your key ring, because it's always nice to be able to reset it to a condition that it worked for you. So if you have firmware that can be reset, that loses a lot of information, but also has the option of downloading a copy someplace else, please do so. Thank you very much. So thank you very much, Jeff. Let me drop for a second, and we will talk, unfortunately, about COVID. Okay. Unfortunately, viruses don't just kind of say goodbye and go away, especially when a large percentage of the human population are completely unvaccinated. Haiti, recently they reported that their vaccination percentage was 1%. This is approximately the same percentage, I think, of most of Africa, short of South Africa and Northern Africa. There are a lot of countries that are practically unvaccinated, and there are some states in our union that are unfortunately relatively close to not being vaccinated. So you're going to have these boomlets of infections. It's just the nature of viruses. They will seek out the weakest among us, primarily those at this point who haven't been vaccinated. The problem, in addition to just the vagaries of viruses, is that because India ran rampant, the virus in India, there are rumors out there that as many as 2 to 3 million Indians have died of COVID infections in the last year. It was a breeding ground for variants, the worst being the so-called Delta D variant. It is more infectious, and thankfully it is not that different that vaccinations are ineffective. They are still relatively highly effective against the Delta variant, but because of the infectiousness of Delta variant and the percentage of Delta in the population is approaching almost 90% or something, and you have a large cluster of people who haven't been vaccinated, you are going to get another spike. It is on the way up. It will continue to go up. Unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball, but the peak will hopefully nationally not be anywhere near what it was last time. Locally, it might even get worse than it was last time in those locales. And unfortunately, as we go into the fall season, because this is a seasonal virus, if no one changes their mind and vaccinations continue to be slow and not terribly steady, there will be future episodes of similar. It also gives the virus an opportunity to churn around and produce other variants, which might even be worse. Again, don't have a crystal ball, can't tell. What you really want to do is stop this nonsense as soon as humanly possible. So ultimately, what anyone and everyone should do is please, if you have loved ones who, for no medical reason, have decided not to be bothered with getting vaccinated, please urge them to get vaccinated. The number one thing that we all can do is get vaccinated and limit the environment for infection of these nasty little viruses. We can't do a lot for third world countries. We will be donating vaccines to them, but that'll go slow, and their infrastructure to have them done and done correctly with storage that's adequate is going to be problematic. So we're going to have problems down the road, but we can make them less of a problem. So please, 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 please get your loved ones vaccinated. So does that answer your question, Rich?
There's some wicked delay on Echolink for me, from when you turn it over to me to when I'm able to transmit. Well, it sort of answers the question. I was really asking, more concerned about just the United States. You know, how bad does this outbreak look compared to the first major outbreak? Because the maps on television, and they're all red, you know, in terms of where COVID is on the rise. So I'm wondering if you know the numbers on, you know, just in this country, how bad it looks compared to the last year of it. Before we had that lull, and it looked like it was over, you know, and now, boom, we're in it again. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. Nationwide, we are a lot, lot better than we were the last time we had a peak. Although the trend is for it to be going up, my guess would be it's not going to go anywhere near the peak that it was for the nation. The problem is, as you shrink down your area to small hotspots, you may indeed find places like cities in Missouri that may very well have worse outbreaks this time than they did last time. So in the microcosm, there will be small hotspots that are going to be probably somewhat worse. Over the entire nation, that's not probably going to happen. Again, because you have a population in New York City alone, 63%, I think, of the population of New York City people have been vaccinated completely. This limits their risk to any kind of serious illness incredibly high. So you're just not going to get those numbers. You're still going to get some numbers from the lighted for one reason or another to pass, the 37% other. But so I don't expect to see anything close to the calamity that we saw in past episodes in the metropolitan area. But there will be states that have gone real light on vaccinating that may have terrible future ahead of them. Again, if they don't change what they're doing, this will not be the last of these spikes. It'll go up, then hopefully it'll go down, but then when the weather gets a little chilly, it'll go back up again. So we have a large population of unvaccinated, immunologically open people for infection. So, you know, I can't tell you the future, but things will be a little bit easier for the states that had a rigorous vaccination method than states that said, what the hell.
Yeah, Missouri, I saw something on television where a doctor in Missouri said they have no more ICU beds, and that's, haven't heard that for a while, but all right, Roy, thank you, you answered the question now, thank you very much, W2BZ.
Okay, you're welcome, Rich, thanks for participating, once again, this is AC2GS. And this is the Limark Technical Net. So please, if you have any technical questions, preferably during this portion, if it's amateur radio related, but if it's not amateur radio related, we try to deal with any and all science questions and general medical questions. We do not diagnose nor treat on the radio. But if you have a science or an amateur radio technical question, please, hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
K2JHR with a weather query.
Yes, Phil.
That's your name, by the way, Joel, Juliet Oscar Echo Lima. The query I have, with all of these people that are coming across the Mexican border, from what I understand, none of them are actually being vaccinated, or if they are, there are very few of them. And so the question I have, if the people are not being vaccinated, and the people are not being really checked for COVID, but they're being sent throughout the country, is there any possibility whatsoever that might be causing the resurgence in this lambda, delta, or gamma variety of this particular virus? I'm just curious. I don't know if that's a fact, but I'm curious if anybody has any thoughts on the matter.
Okay, sorry for the misname, Joel. I got you confused with the other guy you were talking with before the technical net. I have not heard any of this. Usually epidemiologists are anally retentive about such things. If you remember the early days of COVID, they were telling people how different clusters were coming from different places. They made a point that the New York infection that came probably through JFK more likely came from Europe than directly from China, that Wuhan infected Italy and other European states, and then that got picked up and people developed it in New York. So I would assume that they would have some kind of an indication. I would certainly hope that they would offer them vaccinations. There are more than enough at this point. There's a glut to the point where we've been giving out to the third world. And I seriously doubt that the people coming in from the border are spreading all over the areas that didn't get vaccinated and only didn't get vaccinated. So I think that ultimately you have a cluster of active infections all over the country. It never appeared. It just went very, very, very slowly. And the Delta variant comes originally from India, not Mexico, although it could have gone through Mexico to us. or more likely into Europe, because Europe is full of Delta at this point. So is it possible? I guess. Is it likely? I don't think so. I think it's much more likely that it's spreading through the active viral areas that cut across the entire United States.
K2YO.
Yes, Bernie.
I'm just curious, do you have any comment on the number of people that in the news have been declared as having tested positive for COVID vaccinated? There was an American gymnast, I believe it was, part of the Olympic team. Those Texas state senators that were fleeing voting in their state senate, supposedly 8 or 10 of them in that party came down. Why are we getting all these positive tests at vaccination?
Well, the problem is initially the 94% efficacy of both the Pfizer and the Moderna was not based on having an infection. It was based on having a significant symptom. So that's for the non-variant, the original. As the variants come, including Delta, the amount of efficacy, unfortunately, goes down. It doesn't go down a lot, but it goes down. So now the efficacy, say, for Delta, for having a serious illness, is probably something like 10-15%. So that doesn't mean that the rest of the people don't get an infection. They get a very mild infection, and they show positive, but it does not develop to the severe inflammatory cascades that originally landed a large percentage in the hospital and in the cemetery. In fact, when they do the studies of the incidence of vaccinated people when it gets to the point of hospitalization, it's very, very low. So the vaccine at this point, especially for the variants, does not guarantee you non-infection, but significantly improves your risks of not having any significant unfortunate symptoms leading to anything like hospitalization and death.
So a follow-on question then is, does the vaccination protect you from spreading the virus? And it sounds like you're saying no.
Well, you're right. The ultimate answer is no, and that is why initially, once vaccinations went into effect, people were deeply confused by the CDC requesting them to wear masks if they were going to be in an area with people who were not vaccinated and could become infected, that they could indeed spread the infection without a mask. And that's why we kind of alternate between this, vaccinated people need a mask, vaccinated people don't need a mask, vaccinated people need a mask. You know, this week, vaccinated people need a mask because there is that risk for the unvaccinated, especially if people who are vaccinated do not wear a mask and protect those unvaccinated people from getting the infection and then having a serious set of symptoms.
Patients vaccination then is just that you'll possibly have a lighter case, not that it'll actually stop the spread of the virus.
The idea tends to be that it will limit the amount of infection. It will not bring them down to zero. Pretty much no vaccine can kind of do that. They would have been happy early on when we were first told about efforts to develop a vaccine to have something like a 70% efficacy rate. And indeed, the J&J, the Johnson & Johnson, does have a slightly less efficacy rate than the Moderna and Pfizer, but it was still approved. So ultimately, what people are more interested in is sparing people from severe illnesses that could undermine the quality of their life and risk their lives. The secondary benefit is you do limit the spread of the infection. You don't stop it, unfortunately, but you do limit it to a degree.
Interesting. I think that's one of the reasons that there still is a large not vaccinated is that I think the message has been clear as to exactly why do we want to get back. Some of us have to be vaccinated for work, et cetera. But, you know, for people that can make that free market choice, I as a somewhat intelligent person, get all of the reasons and they're conflicting. I think the government, this is not a political, a singular message, I think we're going to be too wild.
AC2GS, I would agree with you. There's a lot of problems, unfortunately. One is that you have multiple agencies. Some of them are national, some of them are national, some of them are international. So you have different egos riding the car. There are different ways of expressing facts. There is a never-ending tendency to simplify things, to calm people down, and every time things are simplified, they're made less accurate. So you have that. And also, unfortunately, people don't like the tendency for the facts to shift. This is happening in real time. There are things that we didn't know when this began that became apparent as time went on, and the directions changed. Some people, for some odd reason, think that that science is kind of frozen in time because they get it out of textbooks maybe in high school. It changes. Facts need to be adjusted. Assumptions are proven wrong. Some assumptions are proven right. And it's an evolving type of a thing. And people get very upset when agencies change their opinion of what you should do and want you to get it right the first time, which would be lovely, but only hindsight is 20/20.
True, and also, though, that brings us to the interesting point that early on, science stood up and said, believe us because we're scientists, and they were wrong. And so we have to be able to somehow communicate, yes, we're scientists, but we've got about a 30-40% right here, or whatever that is. You know, we think about all of the amount of hand sanitizer and scrubbing of hard surfaces to find out that 2 months later the CDC came out and said, well, it really doesn't right light. And things like that, that early on, and anybody that questioned them early on, were told, shut up, it's science. You know, it's you can, that's what we as a society, I think, are going to have to learn is how do we, A, trust the science, but also understand when they're not real, you know, when the science is shaky, we somehow need that, okay, we think this is where we're going, and we're doing this because we're not sure, rather than we're doing this.
Well, you know, I would agree with you that some people use the word science as a battering ram. That the problem is all the other options are much worse. So you have a choice between an educated guess of a group of people who've been doing this for 50, 60 years, who have a long-standing success rate. You know, many of the same people in the CDC worked on drugs for AIDS and all kinds of other viruses versus guys out there in podunk who decided that either they heard from a deity or they heard voices or, you know, there's a lady in Texas who I think believes that the vaccines are alien DNA. So who do you exactly talk to? I mean, is there anyone who has a better odds of getting it right than the clinical virologists and epidemiologists and chemists that are working day and night versus guys who read a book on science about 10 years ago and have a gut feeling about something? So all things being equal, no one is 100% right about almost anything. Science rewrites itself regularly, but it has the structure to be able to do that. The people who think that the vaccine is alien DNA seldom rewrite their stories. So you have to go with the strongest person in the room who knows the most and then learn a lot more after that.
With the healthy understanding that early on in the fight against AIDS, these are the people that brought you ACT, a lot of people. So, yeah, it's not, the track record of, in the last 30 to 40 years, the track record of science deal with major health challenges has been very stellar. We look back and we think about penicillin, virus, et cetera. 80s forward, they have WB2.
Yes, Ed.
science is, by its very definition, constantly changing. There's no avoiding that.
I agree, Ed. That is the scientific method. You test a theory, you retest the theory, you re-retest the theory. And eventually, if you find something that doesn't quite work with the theory, you have to figure out if your test is wrong or the theory is wrong. It's a hopefully self-correcting mechanism. And, you know, you could look at medicine and pharmaceuticals as being half empty or half full of glass. They have made great strides. They have developed medication for Ebola victims. They have developed anti-AIDS viral agents. Just because they got it wrong the first time, they didn't stop. They worked it through. They figured it out. And they have solutions now. The entire class of messenger RNA is a relatively new technology that has made a vaccine possible in less than a year. Up until now, the earliest it took from the motivation to get a vaccine and an actual usable one has been 4 years. If we went on for another 3 years like this, we would be even worse of a mess. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm biased. I probably am. But I have seen science take great strides in a positive direction. They don't get everything right. There's always some egotistical professor out there who has come up with a solution to a problem that makes no sense. I was listening. I mentioned the Papa Network. There was some guy on the Papa Network who said that he had some job related to medical technology, and the answer was a veterinarian medicine for horses or something for I don't know. That was the cure for COVID. So, unfortunately, medical science is your best bet, in my humble opinion. You can certainly get opinions by lawyers and accountants. I just don't think they're quite that useful.
Does plutonium cure COVID?
Yes, it does. A intense fire kills COVID. If you incinerate a body at a high enough temperature, it'll kill every single viral particle. Anyway, the bottom line to take from this is be a skeptic. I have no problem with people being skeptics. I consider myself a skeptic. But you have to limit it to the most productive means. People have to prove their claim. And it's always good to know that they have a basis for those claims, not that they hear voices. For religious saints and such, that's probably a very useful talent. For technology, I would not accept any technical solution that came to people in a voice. Just me personally. Any other questions or comments on this particular topic?
Thank everybody for their input. I was just curious to see what people's thoughts would be on it. Thank you, J.H.R. listening.
Okay, Joe. It was a interesting question. There's a lot of useful stuff out there about COVID. There's some questionable stuff about COVID. And the strange thing is that nothing like this isn't new at all. If you guys have nothing better to do someday and you're passing by a library, go and check out a book on the influenza pandemic of 1918. A lot of very, very similar things were going on. People talking about personal rights and liberties and the right to organize and collect themselves in public and such. It's all been done before, and unfortunately, it'll all be done again. Human beings seldom learn from their mistakes and revisit them repeatedly.
I am in total agreement, and yes, I did study that period, and many of the people that served in World War I that were in France when they came back after the armistice of 1918, and they came back to the United States. In many cases, many of these people were infected with that pandemic or a form of that pandemic, so therefore they brought it back into the United States when they came back. Yes, that is the history, and yes, it's there. There's no question about it. And yes, there are many books that were written on the 1918 pandemic, and they're still available. And of course, you can find all that information online as well. K2JHR.
Yes, that's true, because of the date of it. There's probably more than a few books that are available past copyright, where no one bothered to update the copyright. But still, a fascinating subject, and if you want to get a severe case of deja vu, check out one of those books. Now, for Joel, I just have a little question. Do you remember there was a lot of discussion about where it first originated from? Do you recall where they think the first cases of that, I think it was an H1N1 influenza, came from?
I remember WB28, right?
Okay, Ed.
It was known as the Spanish flu, but I think the actual strain I read somewhere originated in Kansas.
Yes, indeed. Unfortunately, the stuff that I have read, they don't name the place where the virus first came into existence. They name the place usually where they became where they knew about the virus. So the first reported case of, or one of the early reported cases of the Spanish flu was in Spain. But they backtracked it, and they pretty much believe that it originated in Kansas, in the good old USA.
I have a related story.
Yeah, sure, Ed.
Lyme disease was first characterized in Lyme, Connecticut. I have friends in Lyme, Connecticut, and whenever they say where they live, you get the indefinable response.
Lyme disease has an interesting index in my head. When I was training back in 1982, Lyme disease was the question that attendings and residents asked interns and medical students, because no one ever heard of it, and no one knew what they were talking about. It was just at the kind of dawn of that understanding, and over the last few decades, you could say Lyme disease, anyone out in the street, they sooner know it than a list of the last five presidents of the United States. So tick-borne diseases, unfortunately, Lyme disease has a lot of problems, and even treating the infection does not necessarily change the long-term problems. Again, it's kind of reminiscent of the inflammatory reaction that COVID produces. It's different. It's not the same, but it has a secondary effect that even with antibiotics don't reverse all the long-term problems of Lyme disease. But Lyme disease has gone from a very esoteric intern question, in the same way that we used to ask interns and medical students if licorice could cause any problems. And in fact, licorice can you could risk your life. Too much licorice acts as a poison. It produces electrolyte abnormalities that people can die from. So there's a whole bunch of somewhat weird questions that residents and attendings ask interns and medical students, and Lyme disease jumped from one of the esoteric ones to one of the ones that everyone in the United States knows.
Alpha Bravo 6, Mike Bravo.
Yes, Jeff.
Okay, see if I got it. Yep. Yeah, the name of the Spanish flu came because at that time it was World War One, and all the information was being blocked about the flu except for in Spain. Spain was the only country that was reporting it because they weren't involved in World War One in a huge way. So that's how we got the name of Spanish flu. Back to you, AB6MB.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I remember that story. It's unfortunate. It's just a kind of a label. It's an understandable label. Unfortunately, human beings don't deal with labels well, which is why we have this semi-ridiculous thing where we started with the Indian variant, then we had it changed to A.2.246. which no one could remember, and finally someone clever decided to anonymize it by just calling it the Delta variant. All it is an index. It's not about the country. You don't blame individual people. I remember the bird flu season where people didn't want to go near Chinese restaurants for fear that the Chinese workers would give them Chinese bird flu. We're curious creatures as humans, but we tend to look for blame in interesting, curious, and not terribly rational places.
US2N?
Yes, Paul.
Look what happened to Typhoid Mary. You know, they sent her off to the island, and that was it, you know? You don't want to condemn somebody to isolation for the rest of their life. Back to you.
Well, you know, the world had a big problem with Typhoid Mary. She was not a complete innocent. They tracked her down. They realized that she was a carrier. They told her she was a carrier, but she refused to get out of her job, which was fixing food. She was kitchen help. So, you know, the health department would explain to her that she's a carrier for typhus and that she spread it, and that please don't spread it to anyone. And she thanked them very much and got another job in a kitchen making food and spreading typhus. So, you know, after a while, they were kind of stuck. What do you do with a person who refuses the suggested out of dangerous occupation? I don't feel happy about her or the people who had to do what they had to do with her. But, you know, it wasn't a simple solution. It wasn't like the bad old days where someone was a pain in the ass, so, you pardon my French, put them away someplace where we don't have to ever see them. They tried other options with her, but she was adamant. She was going to fix food for people.
Very good, boy. I never heard that part of the story. Very good. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. It's a never-ending battle that we have in these days. I don't think there were any strong concepts of freedom back in the Middle Ages. Everyone was locked into something else. Your king was subject to your god. Your noblemen were subject to your king. Your peasants were stuck at the lowest level and had to answer for everyone else. I don't know. Nowadays, everyone has a strong sense of freedom, and God bless them. But sometimes you have to understand public health is a problem that can't be addressed purely by individual freedom. You have to protect the community for yourself, for your loved ones, for your enemies, for everyone. And that's a difficult concept to get across to some people. Some it works, others just, you know, take out a flag that says don't tread on me, and it all goes downhill from there. Okay. Anyone else with any questions? If anyone, you know, wants to discuss science or one of the articles that I put up last week or the week before or the week before that, you know, anything science-related or such, I'm open for a discussion. We got a little free time, so please, hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
Roger, roger, roger. This is Joe, KC2QYW. Joe from Harrison, New York.
Yes, hello, Joe. Do you have a question tonight?
Yeah, roger, roger. So I set up an appointment with the Westchester County County Center in White Plains, New York, over there in White Plains, New York, Westchester County. And there was like three different kinds of coronavirus vaccine shots. So so when I put the all my information in there, I picked the Pfizer one. So I'm going to do the Pfizer one this coming up Tuesday around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. My question to you is there like a big difference of between the Pfizer and the other ones? Back to you.
Well, it sort of depends where you're comparing them to. The Pfizer is called a messenger RNA vaccine. What they've done is reverse engineer the most problematic portion of the virus, which are spike proteins placed on the surface of the virus that fake a different enzyme of the human body that makes your cells want to take them in. So it's a way for it to break the lock. So these protein spikes were reverse engineered. They genetically found out that the entire RNA genetic code of the Wuhan virus back in February. They published it actually on the internet. You can actually see the genetic code for the virus if you do a Google search for it. They reversed it, and they then produced messenger RNA particles, and they enclosed them in little lipid membranes and packed them into vials, and that's what Pfizer and what Moderna is. Moderna uses a slightly more stabilized lipid layer, so it doesn't have to be kept at ridiculously cold temperatures as the Pfizer does. But they operate around the same way, and they have the same properties. Johnson & Johnson is a different type of vaccine. They use another vaccine to introduce those spike proteins. They use an adenovirus, which is another virus that infects people, but with very, very, very few effects. So they've taken a weakened adenovirus, they've inserted the messenger RNA code to it so that when it infects people with the vaccine, it produces the spike protein, which then gets spread into your immune system and you develop immunity for it. All three are approved in the United States. I tend to like the mRNA a little bit better. You have to take two of them. The second one, not uncommonly, makes you feel a little bit bad for a day or so. So the easiest to take is the Johnson & Johnson. It's a one-dose method. I prefer the other two. I took Moderna, if anyone's curious. So hopefully that'll answer your question, Joe.
Can I give my layman's perspective, Roy?
Certainly, Ed.
Short answer. If you can get the Pfizer, get it. It has the least side effects, but it's the biggest nuisance to them. But if they are offering it, take it. Moderna, there's a higher probability that it's going to make you feel lousy the day after you take the second shot than the Pfizer. Johnson & Johnson is only that, but it has more side effects. Bottom line, my take, if you can get the Pfizer, take it. But basically, they're all fine. If we're really tweaking whether it's 95, 96, or 97%. The Pfizer's a 97. I just made up those numbers. That's it.
Okay, very good, Ed. You get an A-plus for being a layman that can explain these things. We have been extraordinarily fortunate in the vaccination technology that we have started from scratch. All of these vaccines are based on technology that, although have been worked with and researched for about 15, 20 years, none of these have gone into commercial production of vaccines until now. And so, you know, it could have been a disaster. It could have turned out that this technology that was not fully proven was not good and wouldn't work. It didn't. We got very, very lucky. And unfortunately, rather than celebrate our luck, some of us tried to figure out a way around our good luck. I hope they fail at that. So thank you, Ed, for your synopsis.
Pays to help, I guess.
it's always good to help, Ed. You know that. Joe, did we, both of us, me and Ed, answer your question?
Hey, love you guys. Love you guys. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Because I've been doing a lot of research on YouTube and on the news and everything, and everybody's saying on Facebook, YouTube, get it done, because, God forbid, I stay away from people. I always wear two masks when I pick up my groceries. You know, I always put my face mask on and everything, and when I do get the vaccine this Tuesday, I'm still going to wear the mask. Yeah, I'm still going to wear the mask when I do grocery shopping and stuff. But make the long story short, people that they got sick, that got the coronavirus, and now there's another Delta virus out there. I think it's even faster and worse. And they didn't get the vaccines, and they're begging us, do it before it's too late. Do it before it's too late. So you'll be protected. So, yeah, I'm at ease right now. I'm definitely going to do it this Tuesday. And, I put all my information in there. I told them I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I'm allergic to strawberries. Allergic to strawberries. If I eat, like, a whole batch of strawberries, I'll get all over my skin. I'll get, like, red bumps all over my skin. And then I have to go to the emergency room. But other than that, I'm very comfortable doing it. And, thank you, guys. Thank you. Back to the net.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
I think Joe would have to wear his mask for 5 weeks. He said Pfizer. That's what I got. So that's, you got to wait